A matter of luck. A program dedicated to the greatest inventor and scientific discoverer the world has known, Lady Luck. And bringing you in one complete 30-minute presentation, two authentic and true stories of remarkable scientific achievement. Tonight we tell you of Louis Daguerre and the Albers brothers, and how they became famous through A Matter of Luck. Louis Daguerre and A Matter of Luck. The students of Paris in 1823 differed very little from those of today. They were traditionally penniless, unconventional in behavior and dress, and given to embracing advanced political theories and far-fetched philosophies. But one of them, young Louis Daguerre, decided that while starving in a garret was all very well in its way, there was also a great deal to be said for prosperity and comfort, particularly when one was newly married. So he obtained a job, scene painting for the Paris theaters, and soon found himself a great success with orders for his work pouring in from right and left. So, too, was the money. On a certain day in 1823, Louis Daguerre was at work in the theater when...
Jean-Louis de Bonnet, that is terrible, but terrible! We are erecting scenery for a fellow. The more the better, are we not?
Yes, Monsieur Daguerre.
Then consider. This Moor, this Othello, he is...
Oh, my friend Louis Daguerre, the trouble I've had. The doorman, that veritable service, refused me admittance.
I, too, have my troubles with workmen like De Bonnet here.
Good morning to you, Paul. What brings you to the theater?
Oh, a new fashion, a new craze that I couldn't wait to show you. Louis, this is the most fascinating thing.
Another fad from the Latin Quarter, I have no doubt.
What is this thing? Sun portraits.
Sun portraits, eh? And what may they be?
Oh, let me describe them to you. The portrait is made by coating the face with flour.
One moment, my friend.
Jean-Louis de Bonnet! Will you be kind as to stop that infernal hammering?
Now, as you were saying, Paul... Oh, yes... One coats the face with flour and sits motionless for half an hour in front of the camera. A contrivance like a box. Then certain things are done. And lo, there is the likeness of the sitter. I tell you, my friend, it will sweep the world.
So it will sweep the world, eh? Tell me, Paul, where does the sitting petrified for half an hour take place?
Where? Why, out in the sun, of course. The sun must be bright and hot and the day cloudless. There, are you not intrigued?
There's one thing you seem to forget, my poor Paul. I am no longer a starving painter on the left bank, but a prosperous, respectable citizen. The days when I leap in the air for every new fad are gone. Now away with you, there's work to be done. We open this very night, and look about you, not a scene ready.
What has become of the Louis Daguerre of 2 years ago? Oh, well, au revoir. Louis.
Yes?
I'm expecting a draft of money from home, but at the moment, well, you could perhaps spare a few francs.
How much is it this time?
20.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you.
It's a good thing that one of our old crowd has his head screwed on properly, eh, Paul? I must be supporting half the Latin Quarter.
1,000 thanks, Louis. Be sure I shall not forget you. Au revoir.
Oh, Paul, before you go, what were those things called?
Sun portraits. But you're not interested, are you?
I'm interested in such nonsense? Of course not. Ah, monsieur.
This is the best scientific library in Paris, is it not?
Assuredly, monsieur.
Look, I require some information on the new science of the camera and sun portraits.
Oh, with pleasure. There are new pamphlets which tell all that is to be known. A fascinating subject, monsieur. First, one coats the face with flour, then sits in the sun for 30 minutes by the clock. Meantime, the man with the camera...
Good morning to you, apothecary. I wish to purchase the chemicals needed for experiments in sun portraiture.
Ah, yes, monsieur. You are interested in the new science.
Oh, just a passing fancy, that's all. A hobby, you might say.
And the most wonderful one, if I may say so. First you coat the face with fly, then you go outside and sit in the sun for half an hour, and then...
Despite himself, the subject of sun portraiture grew on Louis Daguerre. And although he embraced it first in a mood of idle curiosity, soon it occupied his attention to the exclusion of all else. He allowed his scene painting, of which he had become the foremost exponent in Paris, to fall into neglect. And as his income dwindled, he drew on his fortune to support the expense of his endless experiments. He made a number of discoveries, among them the use of silver iodide to shorten the time of exposure. But this was a minor step forward. And as his wife saw their financial position going from bad to worse, she became a violent opponent of his work.
Louis Daguerre, I am now satisfied that you are nothing but a madman.
Yes, my little flower. Now, where did I put my silver solution?
Never mind your silver solution. I demand your attention this moment.
Oh, very well, but I can ill spare the time to listen. The experiments go well. Soon we shall be rich.
Louis, leave your horrid mixtures alone. Go back to your scene painting again. Oh, let us eat duck again. Oh, how my mouth waters for a fat roast duck.
You shall have it, my dear, when my experiments are successful.
I should have you locked up for a lunatic. Yes, and I have another bone to pick with you, Louis Daguerre. I have smeared my face with flour for the last time. No more will I sit ruining my complexion, of which you were once so proud. Never again.
Then, if I find another model, please do not accuse me of being unfaithful.
None of your student loosenesses before me, if you please.
As you say, a little shrew. And now may I get back to work? Now, where did you put my silver iodide? And the plates, they too are gone. Come, where are they?
In a place where you'll never find them.
Daguerre did not know it, but his wife's opposition was the most fortunate thing that could have happened to him. For when the assistant Niepce arrived that day...
Ah, oh, my good Niepce, you are here at last. Today I've done nothing but search the house for my chemicals. I can't find them anywhere.
You mislaid them, Daguerre.
Aye. On the contrary, my wife has been at pains to hide them from me. Oh, she's hidden them somewhere or thrown them out. By heaven, if she has thrown them out, I'll break her pretty little neck.
Oh, she disapproves, then. And so does mine. The stains on my hands and the ruin of my clothes. Oh, well, that is women for you. Who can blame them?
Who can blame them, indeed? Ah, at last. Now we can start. You see what I have done? I have found our bottles, our plates, and they were hidden here in this cupboard. You see?
I see. Ah, what a woman to stoop to such a trick.
It would be as well to keep this little nook a secret, eh?
A secret it shall be. Oh, but will any harm come from having so many chemicals in the one place? The fumes from one mixing with the fumes from another.
Well, that's a risk we must take, my friend. Now then, to work. Well, what do you think of the sun today? Can we go to the park as usual?
Well, the sun is hot while it shines, but the clouds, oh, they blow over quickly and obscure it.
Well, it's shining now at all events, and hotly too, so we'll try. Gather the equipment.
And madame? She accompanies us to sit before the camera?
No, we've had a little mutiny there. But I know of a young woman who will oblige us. She is Viennese. Attractive, true Niepce.
Oh.
We might do well, photographically speaking. An excellent day for exposures, Niepce. If only the clouds will stay away from the sun. And now, mademoiselle, you will sit here, and I will cover your face with flour. Niepce, the flour bag, if you please.
It's flour, monsieur. Oh, but I never use flour. It will ruin my skin. I shall look horrible.
You? Never. Come, it will not harm your skin. And even so, am I not paying you a good fee?
I have received nothing yet, nor am I likely to.
Let us say, then, that I am owing you a good fee. And now, sit still while I apply the flour. That's the girl. My, how soft your skin is. How very soft.
Daguerre, keep your mind on photography.
What? Of course. There.
The camera is ready.
Monsieur, please tell that little boy standing watching to go away. I could not sit still.
Go away, little boy, before the lady bites you.
And that is bad there. He has gone.
Now for the exposure. Neeps, I'll time it. Ready? Now. One, two, three.
Oh, look! The cloud goes before the sun.
Were I a swearing man, I should say damnation. That's a plate wasted. Oh, cover the camera, Neeps. Expose 2 seconds and ruined. You may relax, mademoiselle. Relax until the sun reappears, when we shall try again. Fascinating hobby.
There were no more exposures that day, and Daguerre returned home to hide his gear from his wife. The plate that he thought ruined by its short exposure, he put in the cupboard with the chemicals, thinking it might be possible to use it for something later on. Now, it must be understood that although Daguerre had experimented for years, photography, as we know it, was a crude and haphazard procedure then. Developing was unknown, and long exposures were needed to obtain a faint image, which soon faded. Daguerre had searched in vain for a chemical which would fix or develop a portrait once the plate had been exposed. It took Lady Luck to show him how this could be done. The day after his fruitless attempt to photograph his model in the park, he and Niepce went to their cupboard to start work again.
Niepce, we shall require the strong and the weak iodides, the oil of...
Daguerre!
Yes, what is it, man?
Look at this plate. Is this the one we exposed yesterday? Look at it.
But I don't understand this, Niepce. It was exposed for about a minute or so. Why, and look, a perfect portrait of our lovely little Viennese model. How do you account for that, Niepce?
Oh, I cannot account for it. There should be no picture on that plate at all. None after so short an exposure.
Yet there is. A better picture than we've ever had before. Now, what could have happened in the cupboard? Niepce, I have it. Some one of these many chemicals is the fixer, the developer I've searched for all those years. Now, which is it?
There is but one way to discover.
Correct. There is but one way to discover, as you say. Every day we will expose a plate and place it in the cupboard. Each successive day we will remove one chemical. And when we find a plate undeveloped, the last chemical we removed will be the culprit, the one we want. You agree?
I agree. Now, let us make a start together. We're on the verge of a great discovery.
Daguerre carried out his plan, but fortune still had a card to play. Each day he placed an exposed plate in his cupboard, and each day removed a chemical. But every morning there was an excellent picture. At last there was only one substance left, and that too was removed. According to Daguerre's reasoning, the plate that was then placed in the now empty cupboard should be undeveloped. But when he looked in the morning...
Niepce, my wife once described me as a madman, and I began to suspect that she was right. Here is a plate that has stood overnight in an empty cabinet. Yet it's been developed. By what, I ask you? By what?
On the top shelf here, monsieur. Something has been spilt. Can you see it?
For one moment, I'll bring a chair. Now, we see. Aha. There's been quicksilver spilt up here. Quicksilver. Mercury. There, success at last. Mercury vapor is our developer, Niepce. Mercury vapor. Fortune has smiled at last.
And it had, for his discovery had made him a wealthy man. It was mercury vapor that had so mysteriously been developing Louis Daguerre's plates, and it was a succession of lucky circumstances that had shown it to him. The daguerreotype portrait, some of which may be seen to this very day, was the forerunner of modern photography, and in a short time was in fashionable and popular demand. Daguerre's second fortune was made, and he died rich and successful. But had he not crowded all his chemicals into one cupboard, and had not some mercury been spilt on one of its shelves, he might have searched the rest of his days without making his discovery, which, as you have heard, was not a matter of intent. It was just a matter of luck.
In just 1 minute, we shall tell you our second fascinating story, that of the Albers brothers. In the meantime, a word from our announcer.
Back now to our narrator and cast for the second unusual but true story in our great program, A Matter of Luck. The Albers Brothers and A Matter of Luck. Thirteen years ago, the president of one of America's largest radio manufacturers had what seemed to him a brand new and brilliant idea. It had limitless possibilities and worldwide scope, and he rubbed his hands together thinking of the wonderful march he was going to steal on his competitors. So he called for his chief engineer and described his scheme in general terms, only to learn that he had been forestalled back in the 20s by two brothers who lived on a farm in Iowa, John and Gerhard Albers. The Albers boys were country-bred and homely, but by their shrewdness and native wit, and aided by Lady Luck, they had developed a splendid idea long before it was thought of by the foremost engineers of the day. Gerhard was the elder by 4 years, and John was nearing his 21st birthday, as the story begins, when they sat listening on their battery-powered radio set to a baseball game from New York. The farm in Iowa had no electricity, and they had to turn the set to its full volume to hear the distant broadcast.
You two lazy galoots, what are you doing in there?
Ain't but a minute and we'll be through, Pa. Just a listening to the ball game from New York.
Doggone it, you flattening them batteries again, listening to New York. What's wrong with the music from Sioux City? You tell me that.
Ain't nothing wrong, but it ain't like a big ball game. Here she comes again.
I don't hear no ball game. Now you get and feed them hogs. A wasting time instead of doing your chores. You reckon them hogs is going to come to the barn and feed themselves?
Okay, Pa. Okay. Well, batteries are flat anyway.
Just like I said. You listening to New York and them batteries go flat quicker than you can skin a cat. Then when your ma wants to sit listening, well, there ain't no electricity.
Okay, Pa. Come on, John. We better get down to the corn. Get it up to the hogs.
I say, wait a minute. You got a dollar, Gerhard?
You got a dollar, John?
No, ain't got but 2 bits.
No, Pa. Ain't got but 70 cents between us.
Then who's going to pay for them batteries to be charged?
Oh, gee, Pa.
That's what I reckon. You boys empty them batteries, and I got to find a dollar. And listening to your ma asking why there ain't no music from Sioux City. Now you get a working right now. 3 hours to sundown and you're a-listening to a ball game.
That was the bugbear with the radio set on the Albers farm, and as a matter of fact, on any other farm in those days. Father Albers, not as enthusiastic about new-fangled things as his own two sons, begrudged the frequent dollar he was obliged to find to keep the batteries charged. And the brothers begrudged the 2 or 3 days broadcasting they had to miss while the charging was done at the local garage.
Hey, Gerhard, what time you taking them batteries into town tomorrow?
Ain't my turn. It's yours.
Ain't so. I took them in twice when you were a courting Rosa Shawn Skittering.
Doggone, you got a memory like one of these here elephants. Okay. Only I wish them batteries weren't so danged heavy. They cut your hands in halves.
I'll tell you something, Gerhard. If you go to Zeb Watt's store tomorrow when you're in town, I reckon you'll have time. If you go to Zeb's store and get me one of them old magazines he sells, I'll milk the cows tonight for you in exchange.
Okay, John. Reckon that's a deal. Reckon I never did take kindly to milking cows.
The two brothers little thought that the magazine Gerhard was to bring home would change the course of their lives, would take them from the hard routine of the farm to wealth and interesting careers. But that was the luck of it. For the next night...
What's the matter with you tonight, John? Ain't ate none of your hominy grits.
Oh, it's this here magazine Gerhard brought home, Ma. Mighty interesting reading this here.
You can read plenty after supper. Now eat up your grits.
Okay, Ma.
You boys always got something on your minds. If it ain't Gerhard a-mooning over Rosa Shan Skittering, it's you with your nose in a book.
Oh, leave the boys be, Ma. Never was no harm in courting or reading. Wished I'd have had more time for book learning.
You had plenty of time for courting, though, Henry Albers. Reckon you was the courtingest man in town.
Say, Gerhard, get a load of this.
What do you got there? Well, how do you like that? Listen, Paul, here's some guys at a big eastern university built themselves a wind machine. A wind tunnel, they call it.
What do they want the wind machine for? Stand on top of Crook's Hill, they'll get all the wind they want.
Yeah, Pa, but this is for testing airplanes. They put a model airplane in and turn on the engine. It blows wind through the tunnel at more than 100 miles an hour, it says here. Gee, with a doggone great propeller.
What drives the propeller? A gas engine?
No. Let's see. Yeah, here it is. A 200-horsepower electric motor.
Well, I reckon that's mighty interesting. They turn electricity into wind, hey? Well, what'll they think of next?
Pity there ain't no way to turn wind back to electricity. And I wouldn't have had to tote them batteries into town today, seeing you didn't let me take the Ford.
Now that's enough talk. I never did see such a family for talking. Eat up your hominy grits before they get cold.
Oh, but Gerhard, why couldn't you turn wind into electricity? Like a windmill. Yeah, a windmill to turn a generator. We want one, and I reckon thousands of other folks on farms would want one. Gosh, maybe we'll make some money out of the idea. Gosh!
From the scores and scores of old magazines of all kinds on the shelves of the country store, Gerhard had, by the purest luck, chosen the one describing a wind tunnel. And the brothers' idea was born. They decided that if a wind could be obtained from an electrically driven propeller, then the natural wind could be made to drive a generator. And the farm work went neglected while they set about putting their theories into action. From a Sioux City junkyard, they bought scrap iron to build a tower, and on this they mounted an old motor car generator. But soon they encountered their main problem.
I never did see such calm weather as we've been getting since we put up our tower, Gerhard.
That's the way it goes, boy. If we wanted calm weather, we'd get a doggone tornado every day. No, it seems to me this idea of ours ain't going to be much use if the propeller won't turn without a strong wind.
Sure, that's right. What we got to do is figure out a propeller shape to spin in every kind of wind. Well, even if it ain't no more than a whisper.
Yeah, but if we have to wait for windy days to test every propeller, we're going to be older than Uncle Zeke before we're hitting the right one.
Yeah, well, maybe we ought to forget all about it. Say, here comes Pa back from town. Reckon we better look as if we'd been a-working.
That was their stumbling block. Unaided by expert knowledge and proper means of testing, the brothers could not fashion the correct aerofoil, the delicate contours their propeller needed to spin briskly in a light wind. The lazy turning of the conventional windmill blades was useless. Their generator had to turn much faster before it would deliver electricity in usable amounts. But Lady Luck was still on their side, and she appeared with their father as he drove up in his old T-model Ford.
You boys been a-working or a-whittling?
Been doing a piece of whittling, Pa. Trying to get this here propeller set to rights.
Say,
you must have been pushing the Ford along some. He's a-boiling ahead clean off.
I've been a-driving real slow. Reckon there must be something wrong. You take a look under the hood, John.
Okay, Pa. Well, doggone. No wonder she's a-boiling. The fan belt's busted. Busted right through. When I lifted the hood, the fan was still turning a piece.
What? The fan turning with the fan belt busted?
Yeah. I reckon the wind coming in through the radiator when Pa was driving along must have kept it turning.
Uh-huh. Guess it would at that. Say, John, Pa!
Now what's gotten into you?
Now I know how to test out our propellers.
Oh, now how are you going to do it, boy?
Well, that busted fan belt with the fan still turning gave me the notion. Pa, we're going to mount our propellers on top of the Ford and drive up and down the road. That gives us all the kind of wind we want, from a breeze to a storm.
The brothers mounted their propeller on their old car and treated a scoffing neighborhood to the sight of them driving up and down with it whirling above their heads. By trimming here and cutting there, they soon achieved an amazingly efficient air screw, whose tips moved 13 times as fast as the wind that impelled it. And from that day, their fortunes were made.
Hey, Ma, take a look at this. Another 20 orders for our electric windmills. Oh, boy. How would you like $1,000,000, Pa? Reckon we'll have to build us a factory.
Well, Ma, I reckon we raised us a pair of bright boys at that. Yes, sir. Brightest and brainiest boys in Iowa.
Well, for mine, I reckon we had more luck than brain, Pa. We're the luckiest guys. Well, that's what I say. Just lucky.
Yes, the Albers brothers, Gerhard and John, were clever, but they were lucky, too. Their wind-driven battery chargers were soon to be seen on farms all over the countryside, as they may be seen on farms throughout the world today. It was not a world-shaking invention, and it used no revolutionary principles, but to farmers the world over, it was a welcome boon. And yet, had Gerhard chosen a different magazine that day in the store, had the old Ford not boiled just at the proper time, they might have given up their windmill generator and still be working on their farm. Their original conception and their success were not so much a matter of intent. They were a matter of luck.
Two authentic stories of the discovery of the photographic developer and wind generators were dramatized by Lindsay J. Hardy from Factual Research Material and were directed by Donovan Joyce. The performers included Junie Cornell, Alan Trevor, Leonard Bullen, Richard Ashley, John O'Malley, Douglas Harold, Warwick Ritchie, and Grant Taylor. Your narrator was Ward Leopold, who invites you to listen again 1 week from now, same night, time, and station, for a further fascinating half hour of A Matter of Luck, a Donovan Joyce production.